Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information that will expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers.
Welcome to the Art of Network Engineering. I am AJ Murray at No Blinky Blinky, and flanked tonight by Tim Bertino at Tim Bertino on the Twitters. Tim, how are you?
AJ, I'm still kind of riding a high. I know we have time delays with when we drop our recordings, but I got to talk about the Asheville extravaganza. You know, I learned some things when I was there. Number one, the rest of our podcast hosts, they are real. They do exist.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not being catfished on the internet.
No, don't got to worry about that anymore. So I learned that. I also learned that if for whatever strike of luck in the future that we get to do this full time and are in person for recordings, probably not going to be able to sit next to Andy most of the time.
Man, you guys, like, I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. You guys were cute together. I got to tell you, like, I was sitting next to you. I was looking over. You guys were like taking notes and you wrote like, I heart you to Andy on the notepad. And I was just like, oh, this is adorable.
Like next time we'll sit him next to Dan and we'll see what really
happens.
Would
have been blood splatter.
So also lots of excellent beer in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yes.
Due to my travel issues, I didn't get to partake in any of the barbecue that you all got to. So I'm going to take your word for it that it's excellent.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you didn't get after any barbecue on Sunday before you left?
No, I didn't. But I do want to talk about Sunday because I also learned that Chris Denny is one hell of an event planner and tour guide. So I didn't fly out until Sunday evening. So he kept me company in the afternoon, drove me around, showed me downtown Asheville and ended Very up cool. taking me to the airport. So that event would not have happened without Chris and his wife. So
100%.
That was excellent. What are your thoughts? How are you doing after last week?
Oh, dude, talk about like a huge high and then a major crash, right? Like, it was so cool to finally meet Andy in person, Lexi in person. I know you and I have met and spent some time together and Dan, and I felt spoiled because I was seeing you guys again within like 6 months, you know, but it was just, what a change in the dynamic recording like in person around the same table versus, you know, how we do it normally. I've been telling everybody just like, I don't know how we're going to do the show from now on. Like, I don't know if we can go back to remote.
Yeah,
I want to work in person.
Jordan just recapped the entire weekend by saying a surprisingly large amount of hugging for engineers.
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, I think we've known, you know, the people that showed up to watch us record and stuff. I think we've known them all for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it didn't. That was a crazy thing. Like, it was really cool to see people, but it felt more like catching up than meeting people for the first time.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah. I don't think I'd ever experienced anything like that before.
Yep, 100%. I was really sad when I turned in our rental for the week.
Man, was that a ride or what?
Oh my God, that was so much fun. So, I requested an SUV because, you know, we're going to be driving around five people. Plus, we had some gear to bring around with us to the studios and recording and everything. Everybody's luggage and whatnot back and forth to the airport. So I thought I would get a nice SUV. And I get there and they're just like, how about a 2022 Yukon? It's like, yes, please.
I don't know why we didn't shoot a music video. I mean,
we probably could have. We could have had like Dan follow us down the mountain in the drone.
Yeah, driving up and down the hills and mountains outside of Asheville in a brand new Yukon. That was special.
Andy was just a big baby. Like, AJ, your driving's making me sick. You know what, old man? Hang on to your stomach.
Oh, I can't wait for him to hear this.
I had the insurance on it. I had to drive it like I stole it.
Yeah, but we don't have insurance on Andy.
That's true. That is true. No, it was definitely a good time. I'm looking forward to releasing that content. I know that Dan's working hard on editing that stuff up, and we will see it in the weeks to come. But of course, by the time you hear this podcast episode, it'll be after we've released all that good stuff. So gotta love the time magic we got to play with here as we record. Awesome. Well, let's get rolling. I am very excited to welcome our guest tonight. He is somebody that I have followed on LinkedIn for quite some time. I get super energized whenever I see him post. He's always posting some really great stuff, and it's my honor and privilege to welcome to the show, Adam Hill. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me. Likewise, I've been following you for actually a couple of years, and I remember when you first made the announcement on LinkedIn that, hey, I'm going to start this podcast. I was like, oh, okay, AJ doing big things now. I'm going to have to check this out. And just watching how this platform has grown over the little bit of time that I've been following it, I've just been pretty impressed. So I'm glad that you thought it was fit to bring me on here. And there's no way I was saying no to this.
Awesome, man. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, you know, watching what you post, and then, you know, from the short time that I've been following you, seeing the progressions that you made in your career, it was like a no-brainer. Like, we got to have this guy on. We got to spill the secret sauce and understand, you know, how does he do it? How does he do it?
Looking at the LinkedIn, I'm wondering what the heck took us so long.
I got to treat it like Chick-fil-A. I don't know if I could give the secret sauce now. I mean, I don't know.
Close to the chest.
Close to the chest.
Well, let's start at what do you do today?
So, yeah, I'm actually a senior network engineer / network consultant for a company called Flexential. Flexential is a co-locations company that does hybrid IT solutions. They're also like a tier two ISP. We have a national market, so we're stretched from East Coast to West Coast with some sites in Canada and even a site in Amsterdam. So a little bit of international presence, but our main focus is here in the States. So I do I consult customers on network engagements, help customers take their network infrastructure and connect it to the cloud, whether it's AWS, Azure, or Google, all your different cloud providers. And I'm typically helping them architect different solutions, high availability, help them understand best practices when it comes to network security and network infrastructure type stuff. So mm-hmm. I'm like a hybrid between the consulting side, and I'm also on the engineering side, where there's certain infrastructures where I would do your typical engineering work, like upgrades and migrations and things like that.
Oh, so okay.
You're talking kind of, I think the sweet spot for network engineers, in that you get kind of that mix of, you know, the business decisions that companies are trying, you're understanding their pain points and their challenges and where they're trying to go. So you're helping them find those high level solutions, but in some cases you're still getting your hands dirty and working through it as well. I think that's a really cool spot to find. I kind of wanted to ask you, you know, the data center colo service provider space, I mean, that's, in contrast to enterprise IT, that's a really different animal. Had you had experience there before, or what has this experience been like?
It's like a network engineer's playground. So like, you have all these people that they do their lab environments, and they stand up all these little EVNG and GNS3 and packet tracer type environments, saying, man, it'd be cool to be able to do this for a company one day. Well, essentially, that's exactly what I'm doing for companies now. Like, it's like a one big lab environment. The only difference is it's production. And I've worked in enterprise IT too. Enterprise IT is good, but enterprise IT is more customer end user focus, and a lot more systems focus, where I'm doing more work managing the servers and less work managing the networking, because a lot of those changes you have to do after hours and all that. But in the service provider space, networking is like the main thing. So it's like all the different type of things you see in lab environments, I'm doing like probably 60% of it on the job. So it's a completely different animal. I love it. I'll probably never go back to enterprise now that I've been sucked into the dark side, the vortex.
Yeah, I think that's a big distinction, right? Because when you work in enterprise tech, at least in my experience, you did maybe like one or two like super cool projects in a year. But then on a consultancy side, like, you're involved in the cool stuff like all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I just got finished helping a customer they needed a high availability solution from Atlanta to Portland, and we used Denver as the primary port, and we used Portland as the secondary path to get to AWS and design AWS to exchange the routes back to the customer data center from Atlanta, and just setting all that up and testing, doing failover testing and all that type of stuff. It was nice.
And we're still going with it to this day. You got to run with that start to finish.
Oh yeah. I led the whole project, architected the whole project. I, helped the customer understand their need for high availability, 'cause they thought they had it. Then I was like, no, you don't. So,
I want to dig into that. So you got some information from a customer. They thought they were already doing something. You do some digging in, find out that they don't have that. How do you explain that to them to where you're getting your point across, but you don't offend them?
That's a delicate walk.
That is a delicate walk, but I feel like what I do is, with customers, I kind of like be myself right off the bat. So you know how like sometimes a person can be loose, energetic and all that when they're around their coworkers or their peers, but when they get around the customer, they kind of like, they got to exercise some level of professionalism. It's like, okay, let me put the real me to the side a little bit. I limit doing that. I'm the real me in front of a customer, and I'm the real me when I'm with my coworkers and peers and all that. So with that being said, I told the customer, kind of like black and white, straight up. I said, hey, you know me, I'm not going to lie to you. I got to ask the questions. Do you want high availability? They was like, yes, I thought we was having it, because they thought just because they had one port and two different AWS instances that they had high availability. I was like, no, that's not high availability. I was like, no. A high availability is when you have two different paths to your AWS environment. And I just told them straight up. But the other thing, I told them straight up, but the thing is, I have a good rapport with them. So like, I'm able to have that direct conversation with them. And then, you know, I kind of like throw a joke in there here and there just to kind of break the monotony a little bit. And I said, hey, to get high availability, you're going through, I'm not going to mention the customer's name, but you're going through Denver right now. You're going through Portland right now. I said, yeah, latency is higher than what it needs to be. So let's make Portland the secondary connection, and let's make Denver the primary connection, because what people don't know about AWS is that AWS has regions. And with their regions, they have availability zones. And these zones cover a large span of territory. So you don't necessarily have, if you're trying to go to a certain AWS region like AWS West, you don't necessarily have to go all the way to Oregon to get to AWS. You can get to AWS to the closest exit point that's in that same region, and then let AWS handle the back end routing, because I guarantee you, I don't care how good your company is, your network's probably not as good as AWS's network. So right? Having that information, I kind of like explained that to the customer in so many words. So I told him, like, let's make Denver your primary point to AWS, and let's make Portland your backup port and your backup path to AWS. And a lot of these guys, they're more systems oriented, DevOps oriented. They don't really know much about networking, so I didn't really get much kickback about it. Plus, I had a good rapport with them, so they kind of just accepted it. They was like, yeah, let's go on ahead and do it. And then I had them get with my sales team. They talked about cost and all that, and they realized that cost wasn't too much more, and they realized high availability was necessary. So they signed the contract and redesigned their network and set up Denver as the primary part, set up Portland as the primary path, and set up Portland as a secondary path, set up BGP between their on-site router, AWS, set up prepending, set up BFD for fast failover and all that type of stuff. And everything worked out. And then once they went to the Denver side, they saw like 30 millisecond latency improvement just by switching from. Yeah, so putting that on the resume. Help the customer save 30 milliseconds of latency.
That's a lifetime.
Once we changed their primary to, in this case, Denver, it dropped the latency to 30 milliseconds, which is huge, because they was trying to do like database SQL type stuff across this link. So I was like, yeah, you're going to need every little bit of millisecond that you could think of. So that was probably a recent project that I did. And I get to do projects like that often. That's a large part of my job, is to help customers understand what they're trying to do in the cloud, understand what they're trying to do in the data center, and then design a solution that allows their network to facilitate their business needs. So it's fun. I love it.
Nice. Nice.
I really like the advice that you gave about how you carry yourself, because I think, especially in these type of engagements, if a customer thinks that you're not being yourself, or that you might be hiding something, I mean, they could pick up on that. You may lose a little bit of trust, but if somebody can really pick up on this person is being who they really are, and it's just, everything's just natural. I think, you know, like you said, building trust, building rapport is really important for customer relationships. I did want to ask, you said that you had built rapport with this customer. Is that, mm-hmm. is that pretty typical that you have, ongoing relationships with your customers, or do you have many that, you know, just come to you for a certain engagement and then they're out, or is it, how does that look?
Both.
Okay.
And the ones that are there for a small engagement and then they head out, what happens is, when I do build a good rapport with them, eventually they need more engagements down the line. They're like, hey, can we get that Adam guy to help us out with this? I've had customers come back.
Isn't that the coolest feeling?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's nice. Now, there are some customers that there's really no getting around it. And you got to kind of like, you got to know your audience too, because not every customer is going to be all for you kind of like being yourself and you lighting up. Some customers are strictly, I've had some customers that was straight to the business. I don't want no joking around. Let's just get straight to the point. And you got to feel that out in the beginning. Like, and then if you see that a customer is like that, then you just got to just stay focused on business. And there's a couple of customers like that, but it's few and far between. Most of the mm-hmm. customers appreciate the fact that I stay my self, where I mix business with humor and all that type of stuff.
You're human. They appreciate that you're human.
Pretty much. That's yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So like, you know, where I work for a partner, and we don't get like assigned to customers. It's whoever has the skill set at the time that the project comes up, whoever's available. Right. But, mm-hmm. you know, even in the short time that I've been here, I've already had customers like ask for me back by name. Like, hey, is AJ available to do this?
Because,
you know, I want his help.
Yeah.
And that's just like really fun. You know, like when I hit that point with a customer, I know that like, one, I'm doing a good job. And two, like I'm establishing that rapport, that level of trust. And then I can sell them some stuff. No, that's not why I do it.
I mean, but the thing is, though, I mean, think about it. Nobody goes into the job saying, all right, I want a job so I can make friends. No. What do people get employed for? They need to earn a living. If they wanted to earn a living, you got to make money.
Well, when you have that trust, like when it comes time to have those tough conversations are a lot easier to have.
Oh, yeah.
Or if it's like, hey, they're like, you got a big gap over here and we got to spend some money to fill it. Like, it's a lot easier to have those kind of conversations when you've already had that rapport, that trust established. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've had those conversations too.
Look, man, I know we're friends, but you got to spend $1 million. Like, we got to fix this.
Spend it.
Oh, man. So I want to ask you, you probably see so many different types of technologies. Like, is there a particular one that's coming up a lot these days? Like, what's one of your favorites to work with?
I mean, I'm your traditional Cisco router / switch lover. But I will say this, though. Back when I was earlier in my IT career, I used to trash FortiGate. I was not a fan of FortiGate at all, and I still hate their switches, but I've recently gotten to get more experience with their firewalls, and I'm actually going to say that FortiGate, they've impressed me with their firewall line. Like, I would say FortiGate's probably got one of the top firewall products in the market, and I always enjoy working on FortiGate firewalls because it's intuitive, it's robust, they have great documentation, their support's good, and good balance between the GUI and the CLI line, and they also have a lot of rich features that just makes our jobs easier as, you know, network security engineers. So I will say I have come around to FortiGate.
You know, Adam, I've been hearing that a lot from people lately about the features, and they, you know, it's the 40 everything, right? They got 40 everything.
40 AP, 40 switch, 40 EMS, FortiGate.
really just bringing it in for a whole, you know, campus branch, whatever, anything. So yeah, I've been hearing the same things from other people as well.
Yeah.
I've heard they've got a pretty compelling SD-WAN offering. I've not really done a whole lot with FortiGate. I worked for a small partner for a few months that led with FortiGate. And so I just started to dig into it, but I didn't hang around long enough to really get my feet wet with it. So
I haven't dealt with the SD-WAN either.
Oh, really?
No, I have not. It's something that we talked about possibly offering, but it hasn't really materialized into anything just yet. Now, I won't say that won't happen in the future.
Sure.
But right now, we typically just use it for more traditional firewall, where it's like the routing and the security stuff. But yeah, I heard the SD-WAN product is pretty solid. I've heard the same stuff.
Yeah. When I hear a peer review on a company I've never heard or worked with, to hear you say they have great support and their documentation is really good.
Oh, yeah.
Sold. Absolutely sold. Like those are two huge things for me. You know, like if I've never worked with them yet, and to know that they have solid documentation that I can go back and reference, I'll take it all day long. Because the documentation I'm dealing with now,
yeah, not all companies are created equal when it comes to documentation.
Oh man, ain't that the truth?
Holy crap! But FortiGate's documentation, I will say, FortiGate, you're doing a good job.
Nice.
Keep up the good work.
Did you hear that, Forta Jeff? We got a guy in our community that works for Fortinet as an SE, and he goes by Forta Jeff.
Forta Jeff, okay.
Forta Jeff, so hopefully he's listening.
Well, Forta Jeff, your Forta gates are great. Your Forta switches still suck.
Love it.
But I love your firewalls, though.
Awesome, man. So I want to go back through your career. You know, how did you get started in IT, and you know, how did you kind of figure out that this is where you wanted to be?
Yeah. So 2007, I'm fresh in the military, trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life, and joined the military to travel and to find out what kind of skill sets I want to have for when I do get out. Like, I knew that I wasn't going to stay in. Mm-hmm. I knew it was going to be a temporary thing, and it ended up being exactly that. But while I was in the military, I actually did IT work, but I didn't realize I was doing IT work. So we did like a lot of network communication stuff while we're on the ships out to sea, while I was on the submarine. So we went under the water. We would have our antennas and our antennas up, and we do our submarine communications up. I'll build the networks and encrypt all the data, and all the shore facilities would send all the message traffic to the ship about like what the ship needed to do next and all that type of stuff. So I was in charge of building and maintaining the networks that facilitated that, and also, you know, security and all that type of stuff. And security, military, you think cybersecurity is serious now, you should see security in the military. It is absolutely insane. I'm like, wow. Well, at the time, I'm new in the field, so I didn't really think nothing of it. But when I look back on it and think about IT now versus or IT security, cybersecurity now versus cybersecurity in the military don't play. But going back to the topic, I eventually fast forward to 5 years later, I get out of the military. And at that time, I'm really a button pusher. I didn't really understand what I was doing. I didn't understand like TCP IP. I didn't understand encryption types. I didn't understand site-to-site tunnels or anything like that. All I was doing was just pushing buttons. Mm-hmm. And when I got out of the military, I still kind of didn't really know what I wanted to do. And what happened was, there was this company called New Horizons Computer Learning Center. They hit me up and they said, hey, we're going to, we got this program that you can go into, and not only will we give you computer skill sets, but we'll actually help you find a job. I was like, so, because I'm out of a job. I'm like, all right, I need to get something. So I go to this boot camp in Gainesville, Florida, and they start doing the A+, Network Plus, Security Plus training. You know how your typical boot camps have. Yeah. And as they was doing this training, this particular office in New Horizons, they actually had veterans there. And those veterans were good at like translating IT in the military, because terms are a little bit different on that side, to IT terms as we know it today. And I was like, oh, so that's what that was that I did in the Navy. Oh, that's what I did in the Navy. Oh, okay. That everything was starting to click.
Nice.
And when everything was clicking, it kind of like at the same time sparked my love for IT. And they started talking about all the money you could potentially make in IT and all that too. And between that and between finally being able to coordinate or correlate what I did in the military to what the certifications were teaching, I just started falling in love like instantly. Like I went from here to here. Well, let me just look at the script. From here to here. There you go. You can see it. From here to here. Like that quick.
Nice.
And I just went all in. I started off at a company called Canon. I mean, you know, everyone knows Canon. I worked for Canon. I worked for Canon as their tech support. I was on the front lines doing tech support, helping customers with printers and all that type of stuff. But you know how, even though you're designed for, you're really hired to do Canon printers, there was actually opportunities to help with like home networks and help with business networks and all of that. It's like, okay, yeah, you need to set your network up to do this so that your printer or your multifunction scanner or whatever peripheral you're using
right.
can connect to the network. So I got a lot of experience there. Pay wasn't all that great though. At the
Shocker.
Time.
Shocker.
Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah. Pay was not that great. I was only making $13 an hour, but I was just so happy to get into the IT field that,
yeah.
At first, I didn't care. I was like, okay, I'm getting experience, and I'm actually doing something outside the Navy. I'm not just unemployed, because prior to that, I was unemployed for a year. So I get the Canon, and at first, I was happy just helping customers with printers and all that. Yeah. But eventually, I get a little bored with that, and I'm like, all right, it's time to move up. And I move up to, they had a tier 3 position open, and I got the job just because I was excelling at the position I was in right
so,
now.
So this was within Canon, a move up, not yeah. a move out. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it was a promotion within Canon. I started from tier 1, and then I moved up to tier 3. So they have 3 tiers, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, and then they have internal IT, which
so everybody
wanted.
So you just skipped tier 2. You're just like, I'm going.
Straight
going
to tier
it.
3. Straight to tier 3. Straight to tier 3. I was not playing no games. Well, really, it was just because they had an opening. They had an opening. I applied, and I got the job just because I impressed them. And Canon, they do have a good like reward system and all that. Like they kind of look at your track record. They have like internal recognition that goes in your file and all that, and all that plays to account on who they hire and all that. But the thing is, at Canon, everyone wanted to be on the internal IT team. So we had the external IT where we're helping customers with multifunction devices and all that, and helping customers with Windows servers and home networks and all that. But everybody and their mama and their grandma and their uncle and their auntie, they all wanted to be on internal IT, and the IT people knew it. They knew it. They knew that there was hungry sharks in the sea trying to take their jobs. So at me, I was actually, even though I was one of those ones, I wasn't one of the ones trying to take their job at that time. I would try to ask the IT people, hey, how do you make it to your level? Like the systems engineers and the network engineers and all that. I said, how do you make it to the level that you're in right now? Those IT professionals, like those engineers, they were stuck in the mindset of, oh, this guy's trying to take my job. So they weren't really help. They weren't really give any advice or anything like that. And it used to frustrate me. I'm like, man, I hope at the time, you know, I'm still new in the IT field. So I'm thinking that's just how all engineers are. Obviously, I know that's not the case now, but that kind of made me feel some type of way. I'm like, man, I'm not even trying to take your job. If anything, I'm just trying to get the skills. And then if nothing comes up here, I'll go somewhere else. Shoot, whatever. So I meet a buddy of mine at Canon. His name is John Rawl, and he was in the same boat as me. He was just trying to make it in the game, and him and I connected, and we were both tired of the lack of pay that we was having. We was both trying to get up in the IT field, and him and I just challenged each other. We was like, yeah, let's go on ahead and get A+, Network Plus, Security Plus, because that school that I went to, the IT school, even though I took the classes and took all the courses and all that, I did not get a chance to take the test because I had some issues with the GI Bill paying for the school, so they had to let me go. Now, because I had a good rapport with the people there, they still helped me find my job at Canon, and I told them that, hey, give me a little bit of time, I'll fix the stuff with the military, and we'll and I'll make sure that the GI Bill pays you so I can go back and finish school. Well, that took a couple of years because I was still battling my GI Bill situation with the military, and when I got out of the military early, they actually garnished my paycheck and all that too. So I had to owe them back, and they was taking a portion of my money. So I'm struggling financially.
Wow.
I'm trying to raise a wife and kids on making less than $1,000 every 2 weeks, and then 30% of that getting taken away. Sure. So it was rough. Man. So I was motivated. I was like, look, I know at that time when me and John was going through similar, like he wasn't in the military, but he was going through similar where like they were struggling financially. So him and I clicked based off of that. And we started challenging each other like, hey, let's go on ahead. Let's get certified and let's move into the IT field.
I love that. I like the buddy system there. You know, you kept each other accountable. You kept each other motivated. Like that's a lot like, you know, a study group or something, right? Like just because it chances are, and I'm certainly guilty of this. Like if you're doing it alone, you're probably not going to hold yourself that accountable as that you are like, you know, having a buddy to hold you to it.
Yeah. And he definitely held me to it. I held him to it. But even if he wasn't there at that time, I was so hungry that I had all the motivation I need. So let me tell you this story real quick before we circle back to that. So at one point while I was working at Canon, I'll never forget this day. My wife calls me bawling out crying. Uh-huh. I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? I'm in the middle of work. I think I was on a break or something like that. I'm like, what's going on? She starts bawling out crying. I was like, all right, I need you to calm down. Tell me what's going on. I can't understand you. And she was like, they cut the water off. I was like, what water? What are you talking about? They was like, I can't give Malachi a bath. Malachi's my son. At the time, he was 1 year old. And we ended up owing like over $400 on the water bill because we just couldn't pay it. And they finally cut it off. And she couldn't get my bath. So I called my dad and said, hey, Dad, I need to borrow $400 so I can do that. Now, fortunately, my dad, he's big on taking care of your family and providing. So he gave me the money, no questions asked. And I was able to get the water cut back on. But at that moment was life changing for me. And I tell that story all the time because at that moment, that's when, circling back to what I said earlier, and when you was talking about how like the buddy system, it kind of keeps you accountable. At that moment, I did not even need a buddy system. And that's for me personally. That's for me personally because the buddy system alone was just thinking about the fact that my wife called me bawling out because we couldn't pay bills and we was getting stuff cut off in the house. And I'm worried about getting evicted and all that type of stuff. And it's like, that kind of grew me up right there. And so I took my love for IT and my concern about my financial situation. And that's when that was all the motivation I made. So me and John were still keeping each other accountable, studying. He was giving me like study materials and all that because I couldn't afford it at the time. And I would go crazy into studying. I would go crazy with the experience and all that, with the experience like working at Canada and all that. And eventually the GI Bill came through finally. So they finally said, okay, the GI Bill paid for the classes that I didn't, that I couldn't finish. So they invited me to come back down and finish that program. So I had 2 weeks of PTO. I used all 2 weeks and went down there, funded my own way down there and said, hey, I'm going to finish these courses and get these certs. And I said, all right, I knew I got 2 weeks or 2 weeks. So in those 2 weeks, I think prior to the 2 weeks, I got A+ already. So I already got A+ at the time because I tried to work internal IT during that time at Canon, and they was like, yeah, because you don't have A+, we can't take you. So I already got my A+, but then I went back to that school and I finished Network Plus and Security Plus, and I got both of those certs within those 2 weeks.
Wow.
Actually, no, I take that back. No, that's not true. I had A+ and Network Plus doing the buddy system with John.
Okay.
So I got that on my own, and then I went down there to finish Security Plus.
Gotcha.
And I went still, and studied for 2 weeks.
Security Plus in 2 weeks. That sounds pretty intense.
Yeah, oh, you're not going to find me doing that.
Nah, I was up to like 1 a.m. I was going from 8 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day studying.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and there was times where, and I, like I said, I used all my PTO at Canon. I had 2 weeks of PTO. I used every last bit of it to go down to that school. And I studied my butt off. I passed Security Plus by the skin of my teeth because, you know, 2 weeks is really not enough time to prepare for it. But I was a man on a mission. So I took the class. I'm in the hotel studying. I'm studying until like 1 a.m. until I'm just like way too tired. go to sleep, wake up at 8 a.m., start it all over again. And then I get the Security Plus. And then I go back up. Now I got my A plus, my Network Plus, my Security Plus, and I've been with Canada at a year and a half. I'm like, this, I absolutely got to be able to get an internal help desk job.
Yeah.
Because like I said, Canon, even though Canon is help desk, it's more like tier one technical support. It's not the same as internal IT. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I need to get internal IT. So I put my resume out there, and I eventually get hired by the bank.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a bank called Town Bank. They are based out of Virginia, because I'm still living in Virginia at the time. And I'm their internal IT. And that was the next learning curve. So I at that place, I started learning how to like manage Windows systems, you know, like building profiles for customers, imaging PCs. Like I didn't know anything about like imaging servers and SCCM and all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. That was the place where I got to learn like some SCCM type stuff. I started learning like more about server hardware, like even basic things like how to change a hard drive out of the server, racking and stacking Cisco switches, helping the network engineers with like different projects and all that. So my main job obviously is internal help desk. So I'm doing, you know, your typical end user support, helping users with PC issues, network issues. Now I'm working at the enterprise. So at the bank, that was the first place I learned about like, you know, port shutdown and all that type of stuff. If you have poor security on it. And I remember the first time that happened, I was like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, I don't understand why your network. I was like, the port looks fine to me. I mean, I don't know. And then that's when they showed me, yeah, there's this thing called port security where it shuts the port down. The network engineers schooled me on that. And I was like, oh, okay. And learned about wireless networking. Like, I learned all kinds of crap at the bank. Like, I credit the bank, at least that time at the bank, for like helping me learn enterprise IT. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was making probably about $40,000 a year. So it was better than the Canon, but I'm still striking by paycheck to paycheck, and I'm still struggling because, you know, you can't support a family on $40,000
a year. No, no way. Yeah.
No.
So maybe. Catch us up on the size of the bank. How many branches are we talking?
60 sites. We had
Wow.
Yeah. So they had their main office, their main headquarters was in Suffolk, Virginia. The main headquarters for the mortgage department, which is where I worked at, was at Virginia Beach, like right on the beach.
Yep.
It was literally right on the beach. And that's where I worked out of. And then they had all the branch offices all over North Carolina, all over Virginia, and they had some satellite offices in like Pennsylvania and all that. Like, I don't know where they're at now, but that's where they were at the time. Mm-hmm. So we had about 60 sites, and I'm helping users obviously in-house, and I'm helping users over the phone. So it was a combination of remote support and, in-house support. And then because, you know, I'm still trying to grind, I'm realizing, okay, if I want to make, at that time, I'm thinking I want to make $60,000. Like, if I can get to $60,000, cause that's how much I made in the military before I left out. If I can get back to 60,000, I'm good. That's what I was thinking at the time. So I'm like, all right, I started looking up systems engineers, active directory engineers, their average salary, 60, 70, 80,000. I'm like, ooh, I was like, oh yeah, I got to grind. All right. I was like, ooh, 80,000. I was just like, my heart was just thumping. Like, the idea of making $80,000, $70,000. I was like, okay, $60,000. I'm like, okay, it's time to get my MCSE.
So I just want to try to figure out where we are in space and time here. So
okay.
How far after the military was this? Like how long had you been out of the military?
At that time, this was around 2015. I was out of the military 3 years at this point. So, okay.
And you're probably still early, mid, maybe late 20s?
Mid to late 20s. I was mid 20s still. Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
And you got a family, wife and child.
Yep. Two children, so, but yep.
Oh, you got two at the time?
Yep.
Or two currently?
No. Two at a time, because I met my wife. My wife had a daughter from a previous relationship.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And then my son is biological. Yeah. So two kids.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay.
Yep. So that's 3 years into the IT career. So I'm 3 years in and I've got help desk experience. I'm trying to make it into the system engineering world.
Yep.
So I'm shadowing network engineers. I'm shadowing systems engineers. I didn't really want to be in networking at the time yet. I want to be in systems.
So you were doing the shadowing at the bank?
Yeah.
Was that like an officially supported shadowing? Like, did you talk to your manager like, hey, this is where I want to get to? And they're like, okay, let's have you shadow, you know, these engineers and you can learn about their job. Or did you like talk to those people and be like, hey, I want to learn more. And they just kind of like took you under their wing. What did that look like?
The latter. So, my manager, even though he wasn't against it, there wasn't really any kind of program to facilitate moving me up and all that. He knew it had to happen, but there wasn't really any systems in place to facilitate mentorship and anything like that. So I just chased it on my own.
I was going to say, I think by this point in the show, we know Adam wasn't going to wait around for it.
No, definitely not.
Well, I wanted to make sure we highlight that because I also knew that that was the case.
Yep, there we go.
No, I wasn't waiting. I wasn't waiting.
You just went to those like systems engineers and you were like, hey, like I want what you got. Like, can you show me? Are you willing to show me?
Yep, that's exactly what happened. And unlike the Canon engineers that were kind of standoffish, these guys were more than happy to take me under the wing and bring me in the room and show me at least some of the stuff that they did. So it was a lot better. Now, it wasn't like perfect, but it was a lot better than Canon. So at the time, I'm just happy about it. And like I said, I helped them out with some projects and all that. I helped them like rack and stack Cisco switches. I helped the systems engineers like change out hard drives and we had HP ProLine servers and all that. And whatever we had, network outages or systems outages, I would help the engineers troubleshoot.
Something new because, you know, I get wanting to jump in and help out with new things or troubleshooting things here and there, but I don't think I've ever heard a story of when there was an outage, somebody who isn't responsible for it is willing to jump in into the fire and help out. I mean, if that doesn't speak volumes for that company to give you a shot, I don't know what would.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Eric Child. He said I would mentor Adam because he was like, he could best press 500.
I wanted to make sure you saw that.
I saw that. I'm looking at it right now laughing.
You got to say no, man. It's 550.
And look, 550.
Well, that's why they let him troubleshoot. You're like, oh, yeah, man, you can have the keyboard. Look,
I intimidated them. They didn't want me to beat him up. They're like, ugh, we don't let him help us. He might kidnap us. So let me
that's
just.
That's one way to grow your career we haven't heard of on the show yet. Yeah. Total fear.
Right. But no, so I jumped in and helped them troubleshoot. Now, it wasn't necessarily me telling them what to do. It was more like me. Them making changes and then me verifying the changes and all that. It was still a valuable experience.
Oh, sure.
Valuable because I'm learning how to verify changes made and then they're schooling me while the changes are being made. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to go too deep into that. So fast forward, I get my MCSE. And I also met another guy named Dan Boykin. Shout out Dan Boykin. Him and I still talk to this day. He was another guy that, like, once John Rolfe, he ended up staying at Canon. And we still talked, but it wasn't, like, the same. I go to Town Bank, and then the next person that I buddy system with, like, getting certified and moving up the ranks was Dan Boykin. He was the systems administrator at the time. Now he's, like, a security engineer manager. He moved up just like I moved up.
Nice.
But him and I clicked and it's funny because I only met him one time. I met him one time when I went up to Richmond to do a install or like a set up a new office, set up the PCs and all that and phones and that the new office. I met him there. He was setting up the servers and I was setting up the PCs and phones and all that. And we met there and we just became good friends ever since then.
Nice.
And we're still friends to this day. We still talk to this day. At least once a month, we're always checking up on each other. Like I said, he inspired me because he was able to get his MCSE and he was able to move on to bigger and better things and all that. And I eventually get my MCSE. And then I realized in Atlanta, well, not Atlanta, in Virginia, I realized that in the area that I was in, which is like Hampton Roads, Norfolk, Virginia Beach and all that, a lot of those jobs are government oriented. And I was trying to get away from government because, like I said, I really didn't have a good relationship with the government at the time. So I was like, all right, and this is something for your viewers to understand. Don't be afraid to relocate if you have to in order to get your dreams to come true in the IT world. If you want to make it in this IT world, don't be afraid to relocate. So I knew that if I'm going to make the kind of money that I want to make and do the type of stuff I want to do, I got to get up out of Virginia. So we sift through different places that we decided to, that me and my wife talked about. And then eventually we relocated to Atlanta because, you know, Atlanta, big city, good airports, not too far from my family and all that. So I was like, all right, we're going to settle in Atlanta. And we relocated to Atlanta. I found a job. Well, I was actually job hunting in Atlanta with my MCSE. And the thing about job hunting with the thing about job hunting outside of the area that you live in, what makes that challenging is that a lot of recruiters won't really give you the time of day because they'd be like, well, we really need you to be in Atlanta or we really need you to be in the city that we're recruiting for before we can really take you serious. So I had to fight through that and it was tough. And I almost got to the point where I was about to just say, you know what, I'm just going to move down there anyway and I'll just take my chances. But fortunately, a job did come. Somebody did give me an offer, which as a systems administrator, they kind of gave me a lowball offer. So it was like $47,000, but I was kind of disappointed in that. But I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to take it. I need something. I need to get down to Atlanta.
Get kind of get your foot in the door, you know, in Atlanta, you know, and go from there. Right.
Yeah. And that's what so ended
I
up
did.
Happening.
I did want to ask, I've never really delved into the sysadmin side, the Microsoft side. Did you, it sounds like at least getting into Atlanta, it was a little bit difficult, but had you, when you were looking, were there a lot of positions open for that kind of vertical?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Tons of positions open and 95% of them turned me away because I lived in Virginia. I was like, look, and I even told them, like, look, I am willing to pay. I don't need you to relocate me. You don't have to pay to relocate me. I'll relocate myself and figure it out. I just need opportunity. Mm-hmm. And they just didn't, they just said, sorry, but. They just said, sorry, but we decided to go in a different direction. I've actually traveled down to Atlanta and I interviewed for two different companies while I was down, while I was still living in Virginia.
Oh, wow.
I actually took a rental car. I actually took some PTO and I took a rental car and I interviewed for two different companies. I was like, I'm going to try to interview for as many companies as I can. I went down there for a week, interviewed for two different companies, drove back up. Both of those companies turned me down. So that was a little bit frustrating. That was a little bit frustrating because I had to get a rental car, spend money and all that, and it just did not work out. But, I mean, like I said, whenever you are chasing something, anything that's worth having, it's worth waiting for, and sometimes you got to get out your comfort zone. So I was willing to take that risk, and it didn't work out. But, like I said, the other job came right at the nick of time because it was right at the end of summer. So I was able to move my wife down there and get kids settled in school and all that type of stuff. I worked this job. And then my first job in Atlanta, and you just let me know if I'm going too long. I'm just trying to like...
No, man, you got all the time in the world. We're good.
Okay, cool, cool. So then I moved to Atlanta. I worked this job, and right off the bat, me and the manager started off cool maybe for the first week, but then after that, we did not get along at all. I'm over here trying to... push the bar forward. She's like, no, we need to move at a slower pace and we need to do this. And it just ended up being a clash of ideas. And I will say there was a growing thing for me because it was a growing experience for me because, you know, when it comes to managing systems, one, you got to know your role. And two, you got to understand the needs of the business. So I did not understand that at the time. At the time, at my first system admin job, I'm thinking just all technology. Like, I'm not thinking nothing about the business. So part of that was on me for being too pushy about trying to implement all these new things without understanding the business objectives. And I think she was trying to tell me that, but I wasn't listening. But at the same time, with her... Because I actually had a man. I actually had a manager who was under me, that I was under. At the same time, I guess once we started like having friction in our work relationship, she would kind of like throw me to the wolves and all that. And like there'll be times where systems weren't set up right that she gave me bad instructions on. Developers would start yelling. Ooh. And I'm looking at the manager like, "You gonna tell them that you the one that told me to do this?" And she'll just sit there and brown nose herself up like, I ain't got nothing to do with that. That's all you. Oh, that pissed me off. Oh, I was so hot.
Wow. That is dirty.
I was like, I was so hot and all that. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to last here long. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stay here just long enough to kind of get my feet wet. And I'm probably got to find another job. Well, that job only lasted a month. It lasted a month and they fired me. we had an outage at one point, and I had to help them with the outage. I helped them fix the outage and all that. And they and after that outage, I guess they tried to hold me accountable for it, even though, you know, when it comes to leadership, unless you just do something blatantly terrible and all that, you typically say, hey, the team failed. Let's do like lessons learned and all that type of stuff. We didn't do none of that. We didn't do no lessons learned. We didn't do no training. We didn't do none of that. It was the outage happened. Her and I worked together to fix it. And then after that, they fired me the next day. So that was a terrible experience. And I was, I was pissed off.
Yeah. So not only did you take the chance, you uprooted your life to take this job and to have it not go well in a hurry. That, I mean, how did you handle that?
I kept the end goal in mind. The end goal is I knew that the IT field was stable, and I knew that my why was big enough. Like, my why was, hey, I will do anything to get to break into this field and get my family to stability. So my why was big enough, and going through those experiences, it also helped shape me to understand that whenever I get into a position of leadership into the community, I'm not going to do the people behind me as somebody's leadership has done to me. So all that, thinking about all that, is what kind of kept me to stay grounded during that difficult time. So I'm getting my resume out there. And at the time, I worked at a computer repair shop. So I go from a system admin job to a computer repair shop making $15 an hour again. So it's like, man, I'm taking a step backwards. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So
gotta do what you gotta do to keep the food on the table, though. So and respect for that, because there's a lot of people that would like sit there like, nope, I'm not going back. I'm not going back. I need that next SE job, the next systems engineer job. But you did what you had to do, man.
I did what I had to do, and I told the computer repair job that, hey, I'm a systems engineer, and ultimately that's what I'm trying to do, and this is temporary. And they kind of understood it. They was like, yeah, you're cool, man. Just come work for us for a little while, and we'll just help us out while we're trying to get our staffing going. And then once you get something going, then we'll facilitate transfers and all that type of stuff. So that was real cool. And the boss was there was real good. So we had to understand that at the beginning. So I ended up working there for like 2-3 months while still looking for system admin jobs. And then finally, November of 2016, everything changed. Everything changed for the better. So a recruiter hit me up for a system admin job, making $27 an hour. And I'm like, ooh, this is good money right here. I was like, it's good money. But it was a contractor job. It wasn't a contract to hire. It wasn't even a contract to hire. It was just contractor.
Okay. All right.
But I didn't care. I heard $27 an hour, and I heard I'm getting back in the system admin world. So I hopped on it. They ended up hiring me. I interviewed with the guy, and I interviewed with a guy named Johnny Harris. Him and I still talk from time to time on LinkedIn. We're still pretty good. And I get the offer, and I tell the computer repair boss, I'm like, hey, look, this job is hiring me, so I want to move to part-time. He was kind of upset about it. So, like, the thing that we talked about before where there was understanding, now when it came time to actually execute, he was, like, a little upset about it, but he accepted it. He was like, because he was like, I guess I'll accept it. But he got kind of mad at first. But I ain't gonna lie, this time I didn't care. I was like, look, I'm about to get back into the system admin world again. I just got fired, and I'm working this computer repair job, which was good, though. I actually learned a lot about computers doing the computer repair job, like learning the motherboards and learning transistors. And, you know, I actually learned a little bit more about the Windows operating system during that time. So it was good experience. And then you always got the customer service stuff. Always in customer service experience. So I get to the system admin world, and now this is where my first opportunity to work at a large data center. So I'm working at a large data center, probably about 500 servers. It was on-premise data center in Smyrna, Georgia. It's a 4-month contract, and essentially I was contracted because their main guy, he ended up having to take extended leave. So they brought me in to finish this project, which was pretty much an 80 hardening project, a server hardening project, where ultimately I had to go to all the different servers and coordinate with all the developers and management and database admins. And I had to change their permissions to where, instead of them having local admin rights to every server, we basically set them up to where they're part of a security group, an AD group. Mm-hmm. And we made sure that AD group can make them access servers. And then I did some exchange work for them. I remember I had to ex transport server because the ex transport server went down the first day I came on site. The first day I came on site, their ex transport server went down, and they only had one, so it was a single point of failure. And obviously, Exchange was completely down for them. So it was a bad night.
I gotta know. Just about everybody I've ever talked to that's been an email admin or an Exchange admin, even for a short period of time, they have never been able to walk away from that. So are you still doing some sort of an Exchange? I know you've had multiple jobs, but it seems like any time somebody hears that you had even a day's worth of Exchange experience 10 years ago, you're the guy.
Today, no. But I was doing Exchange work all the way up until recent.
Okay, there it is.
But with my current job, no, I am not doing any Exchange work, but I was doing Exchange work for a long time, like you said. So the Edge transport server goes down, and I'm standing up a new Windows 2008 box. I'm building out the components of Edge transport, getting everything set up and all that type of stuff. The senior engineer at the time, he's talking to Microsoft, trying to get it fixed. They couldn't get it fixed. And then we stand up this new server. And then because I came in and kind of helped with that, I build a rapport with them right away. That's like, oh yeah, we have respect for this guy. He's able to come in, hit the ground running, all that type of stuff. So then we get back to the project, the security hardware project, 500 servers, about 200 users. I get all that. It took me a few months to get them all squared away and all that. A lot of like coordinating, saying, hey, I'm going to move you to this group. Make sure you can access your stuff. If they couldn't access it, then we'll troubleshoot, all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Then they stood up some new servers and all that. So I would be racking and stacking, exchange. Definitely did some Exchange work. Definitely did some AD work. And
what version? Just curious, what version of AD and Exchange were you running?
2000 Exchange 2010 AD 2008.
Yeah.
That was their environment. And this was before Office 365 really took off. So while I was working there, everything was still on premise. So we finished the security project, and the 4 months is up, and I'm telling them, hey, look, I love working with you guys. Is there any way we can get some kind of full-time deal going? And they was like, yeah, we want to do it, but it's just not in the budget. So the boss, because he was so good, he was so cool with me. He was like, hey, look, I can't really put you on full-time, and your contract is up, but what we'll do is we'll just take the security budget and we'll pay you from that security budget so that you can have time to find a full-time job. So the boss did that for me.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was able to stay on for like another month or so while I found another job. Cause I was going to try to stay there. And,
you should have told them to up their security budget.
Right. I should have.
They must've had more money in the Exchange budget.
I did want to dig into that because I'm fascinated by, people who go after these contract jobs, because honestly, they scare the crap out of me. Now, I know there's a lot of value, especially how much experience you gain, but I gotta think with what you're saying and the impact that you had to have made in that short period of time, that I'm sure they would have kept you in a heartbeat if they could have.
Oh, I was going to get to that. I was actually going to get to that. Cause
all right, here we go.
Funny thing, you mentioned that. So, I searched for another job kind of reluctantly because I really wanted to stay there at the time. I was like, even if they didn't pay me more, even if they just kept me at that rate, I would have been fine because I just enjoyed working with those guys. I was getting great experience. I find a job system. It was a systems and network administrator job. So it's kind of like a hybrid job for a enterprise company that did like benefits management. I interview for it. I get the offer. It's kind of like closer to the city, but it was cool. And they paid me $60,000. So I'm just going crazy. I'm like, I'm back to $60,000. Cause I told them that's what I wanted. I was like, yep, I want $60,000 for this MCSC and this experience. I was like, yeah, we could pay you that. I probably could have got more. That boss told me later on that I probably could have got up to $65,000, but I just said, you know, I'll just hold it on $60,000. So I get $60,000, and I ended up leaving the contract job, they even throw a party for me and all that. And, you know, as contractors, nobody really throws parties for contractors. It's like, you're a contractor.
Right.
You
do I've the never job, gotten a party when go. I'm done, man. Like,
no, they actually threw a party. They had a cake and everything. Everyone wow. came. It was nice. Like I
you
said,
were part
I
of the built, family.
I was really part of the family That's that just awesome. Did not get benefits. And then what's funny was, circling back to what you was talking about, Tim, my first week starting the new $60,000 job, the senior engineer quit.
Ooh. No way.
He quit because he actually quit. And they asked me if I wanted to come back. But at the time, I'm making 60. I was like, nah, I got to stay here now because I have a hard rule for myself that if I offer to work for a company, I do a minimum of a year. And then after a year, I weigh my options and all that. But at that time, I was so happy to get back to 60,000. We bought a house again. We was actually homeowners again. So my wife was going crazy. She was celebrating. And it got to the point where I was able to go to a dentist appointment, get my teeth fixed, or not fixed, but get my teeth like, you know, regular cleaning. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, because I had benefits and all that, I was able to pay that without really worrying about it. And I was just like, thanking God. I was like, thank you, man. Lord. Like, I was just praising God and everything.
Huge turning point. That's awesome.
It was a huge turning point. Like, when I got back to 60,000 and then my wife got a job, and then between her and I together, we're making about 90,000 together. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we can finally not be scraping by paycheck to paycheck no more. Like, that was just a surreal feeling because I'm going, yeah. It was about, so going back to timelines, it was about from the time I get out the military to the time I'm working at this company called Hodges Mace, making the 60,000, it was about a 4.5 year period of struggling, scraping by check to check,
yep.
Not knowing what's going to happen. Like Tim said, taking contract jobs, not knowing when you're going to be let go. Like, it was just a whole lot of uncertainty during that 4.5 year period. But just continue to persist, continue to grind, continue to get certified. And then I get to this job and everything is looking good. Now, at this time, I'm not just a systems engineer anymore. I'm a systems and a network admin. I'm actually a jack of all trades. So I did systems engineer work, network engineer work, and I still did help desk work. So I still help users with PC problems and all that. Mm-hmm. But
get them printers out of here. Get those printers out of here.
I was a printer expert by then.
Right?
Between Canon, Town Bank, and now this, I was the printer guru by then. But that was funny because we actually stood up a print system. I forget what it's called, but we actually stood up a secure print system where essentially it was like a cloud print server that combined all the printers together. You print to the cloud and then it like goes to the nearest printer.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I forget, man. I can't remember what the product is called. It's been a while, but I helped stood up that server. And essentially, every user got to print to the cloud server. It prints to the cloud server, and then they go to the nearest multifunction printer, put their type passcode in, and then the cloud server
spools that print to the print job. I've heard of that stuff before. Different places call it different things, but
I cannot remember the name of that system. It may come back to me, may not. Who knows? But I actually stood up that system. I stood up inventory systems. I stood up network systems. And while I was there, we had two big projects. One, we was moving to a new COLA. We was moving from Windstream to QTS. So all of the servers, all of the storage, we moved all that stuff over to QTS. And that was my first exposure to a co-location. Like, I didn't understand the idea of co-location until I started working the Hodges Mace job. And I'm like, they was like, yeah. I remember my boss used to say, all right, yeah, we're going to go to the colo. I was like, what the heck is a colo? I was like, I had no idea what it was talking about. But, you know, I'm the systems admin at the time. I'm kind of like his head guy. So I'm like, I got to pretend like I know what I'm doing. I can't be embarrassed of myself not knowing this stuff.
Google colo real quick.
Google search. It's like, what the heck is a colo? But I remember I thought that was just like a slang term that he said. I didn't realize that's a legit thing. So especially now that I'm working for one. But I get exposed to the system side and the network side. And then that's when I started thinking, you know what? Network is actually more fun than systems. And then that's where now we circle back to the art of network engineering, how I got into networking. I get to that job doing the hybrid thing, and I'm realizing that I enjoy networking tasks more than I enjoy system tasks.
Sure.
And I said, all right, you know what? I'm getting my CCNA. Studied my butt off. I probably studied for a year, though. Now, remember, this is not the new CCNA that's like borderline cakewalk. This is the old CCNA where you was in the command line.
Here we go.
You were still in the command line. You were still troubleshooting EIGRP issues. Yep. Like that CCNA test was tough.
Yeah, hey, Adam, I love the old CCNA so much. I did it twice.
You did it twice?
Yeah. Not because I wanted to, I'll say that, but.
Because you had. But you wasn't mad that you had to do it twice.
Yeah, no comment.
Okay, yeah, no comment. Yeah.
Hey, everyone. It's Lexi, a.k.a. Track It Pacer, or as my coworkers now know me, that little gremlin that keeps crawling in and out of the server racks. I have a question for you. Have you ever heard of the USNUA? So let me throw three topics at you. Number one, network engineering. Number two, no annoying sales pitches. And number three, beer. Does it get any better? Have you ever wished you could have someone to chat with in person about network design that isn't trying to sell something to you? If your answer is yes, then let me tell you, you need to check out the USNUA. The US Networking User Association is a group of fellow network engineers that like to openly chat about all things networking. And the added bonus, there's no selling. These user group meetings are completely devoid of OEM agendas. That means no pushy salespeople cornering you after the meeting, trying to squeeze you for that next purchase order while you're just there to get mildly buzzed and talk about VXLAN or something. Find out all the goodness of the USNUA, that's the US Networking User Association, by going to usnua.com. We hope to see you at the next meetup in your area.
So yeah, you started liking the network stuff. How did it feel? Not that you weren't cool before, but how did it feel to really become one of the cool kids?
Oh, I felt like, I felt like what took me so long to realize this? Because, one thing about networking is that, and me and one of my coworkers, we talk about this all the time. The thing about networking is that in the network world, as you guys know, networking follows a strict set of protocols, a strict set of rules. So it makes troubleshooting not easy, but it makes troubleshooting very straightforward. As long as you understand your layers of the OSI model, especially layer 1, 2, 3 and all that type, and layer 4, because you know we typically work in layers 1 through 4. As long as you understand those layers, troubleshooting is very straightforward when it comes to networking, in most cases. Whereas
you know,
when you're troubleshooting.
You just opened my eyes to something, because I went to college for computer science and I started sitting in the programming classes, the math classes, and things were just going over my head. And I finally sat in Cisco Network Academy at the school that I went to. And things just started clicking for me, and I just took it at face value. I'm like, okay, some of this stuff I just really get, but what you just said there, that the structure that there is with the different layers, because I always find myself doing that today, is I never want to overlook layer one. So I typically, right. Even if it's a quick look, layer one, work my way up. So yeah, I can really relate to that, because there is that, even though it's somewhat high level, there is that structure that you can follow that makes it, you know, like you said, not easy, but easier to pick up. So yeah, I can really relate to that.
Yeah, troubleshooting is just, to me, it was just more straightforward. Like when you're troubleshooting a Windows server, it could be, you got to worry about patching issues. The OS gets corrupted.
Just reboot it. It'll probably work just fine. That's fine.
Yeah. That's the magic reboot, but that works for routers too.
Oh yeah.
It's just that the problem is nobody wants to reboot their firewalls and routers.
Nope. Nope.
People reboot a server before they reboot a router.
Yeah. Very true.
But yeah, so I get back to so Hodges Mace, I start studying for my CCNA. So I'm like, all right, you know what? That was around the time where I started transitioning from systems to networking, because I wanted to do more. That's when I started realizing I enjoyed the networking side more than systems. And then I studied for a year for the old CCNA. And I'm glad I did that, because like I could have just took a brain dump and got the test real quick. But I was like, what am I going to learn doing that? Like, no, I want to be a solid, good network engineer. So I was like, you know what? I'm actually going to take the time, go through all the exam objectives. At the time I had GNS3, so I stood up GNS3, and I'm actually configuring all the OSPF, EIGRP, and even basic BGP and all that type of stuff, configuring interfaces. And I mean, just like learning the networking side, it just became amazing to me, because now it's like, all right, I know how to stand up an interface now. I'm understanding subnetting now, because at the time I really wasn't all that good at subnetting, even though even when I was a systems engineer, I wasn't that good at subnetting. because, you know, everything is 255-255-2550. That's what everything is. Keep it simple, right? Stupid. But in the networking world, you actually need to know a little bit of subnetting. So, like, just understanding what a /24 is, what a /25 is, what a /23 is, and what that means and all that type of stuff. It was just, I just love learning it. And I was like, you know what? Nope. I don't want to be a systems engineer no more. I want to be a network engineer. So, and technically, I did do networking at Hodges Mace. Like I said, I was a hybrid person, but because I was a hybrid person, I wasn't only networking. I was networking, systems, help desk, everything.
Yeah.
I get my CCNA, and I kid you not, God's my witness, I get my CCNA the very next day. Actually, no, I get my CCNA. I tell my boss, hey, I got my CCNA. He was like, oh, congratulations. That's what's up. Blah, 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 blah. I'm so happy for you. The very next day, they laid me off.
Oh,
shut up. Oh,
the very next day after I got my CCNA, they laid me off. Now, it wasn't because I was a terrible worker or nothing like that. It wasn't like the other job where me and the boss had beef or nothing like that. No, they laid me off because they had to do budget cuts for the company.
That's rough.
So I was like, man, I told my boss, I was like, man, it was a good thing I got CCNA, huh? He was like, yeah, it is. So he gave me a reference. I get back on the grind. Now, the good thing is because they laid me off and it wasn't like no disciplinary thing, they gave me a $4,000 severance pay. Mm-hmm. So they gave me a little severance pay. And here's the thing. I got my CCNA. And this was also around the time I first started getting on LinkedIn, too. So I wasn't obviously nearly as active on LinkedIn as I am today, but I did knew that LinkedIn was a pretty decent tool for job hunting and all that. So that's when I started like getting my feet wet in LinkedIn when I worked at this Hodges Mace job. And I put on there that, hey, I'm job hunting and all that. And I said that I got my CCNA, I'm MCSE. I want to be a network engineer. I don't mind being a hybrid systems and network engineer as long as I'm doing networking, because, you know, I'm trying to find a job now. The cool thing was, because of LinkedIn, and this is when I started like taking LinkedIn serious, I had a recruiter reach out to me on LinkedIn, and this was the same recruiter that turned me down from the past because of that issue that I had with the manager from the first Atlanta job. That recruiter hits me up again saying, hey, look, I got this systems engineer job for you, but it looks like they want somebody who knows systems and network. And I said, perfect, that's the type of job I want. So I applied for it, and I'm trying to get like unemployment, but at the time I had so many people hitting me up for interviews and recruiters hitting me up for job offers, and I was like, you know what, me trying to apply for unemployment is missing out opportunities to actually get a job. So I said, you know what, screw the unemployment, because they were just giving me a hard time anyway, saying you need to use your severance pay or you need to use this and you got to do this, and it'll just get on my nerves. And I'm like, you know what, I'm done with y'all. I'm just gonna take my risk and do a job hunt.
Yep.
And then I interviewed for a bunch of companies, and then I had one company, which was my last job, the one before my current job. They gave me an offer, and it was $20,000 more than what my last job was. So I was only out of a job for a week. I was only out of work for a week.
Got a $20,000 raise.
I got a $20,000 raise and a $4,000 severance pay.
So wow. Do you equate that to any one given thing? Like, do you think it was really the CCNA that opened that door for you, or just you had been in the game for a while now and you were starting to mass multiple different talents? What do you put that on?
So I will say the CCNA was probably the thing that got the recruiter to speak to me. So the recruiter saw that I had a CCNA. He said, okay, that's somebody I need to talk to. I always equate certs and degrees as like, I kind of like use the restaurant analogy. When you go to a restaurant, when you pass by a restaurant and it smells really, really good, I consider the resumes and degree like the real good smell. Like, that smells good. I really need to go try that restaurant out. And then your experience / your personality, that is the actual food right there. So when you go inside the restaurant and you taste the food, you're like, oh yeah, this is delicious. That's what I consider like the experience and the, whatchamacallit, the experience and your personality is like is the equivalent of, okay, this is somebody that I want to work with. So like the CCNA, I think that's what triggered the recruiter to reach out to me and say, hey, look, here's a job for you that I want to try to recruit you for. But then ultimately it was my experience and my personality that attracted the my last boss to me. And they also had like a technical test where they asked like questions about Exchange, questions about firewalls, questions about networking, because it was a hybrid job. And I did pretty well on the test. And I guess he told me later that, yeah, a lot of people fail that test. They do horrible. And I actually one of the ones that they're really well on. So he was like, yeah, I got to have this guy on my team. And I interviewed with him one day and they gave me an offer to, like the next day.
Wow. I love that analogy. AJ, I got to tell you, man, I got to finish the CCMP because I want to smell good.
I love that too. Like, you know, you're right. When you pass by a restaurant and you smell that food, you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna wander in there and see what that's all about. That's a great way. Cause you're right. Like those are the things that start the conversations, right? Like, you know, people sit there and say, oh no, you know, I'll trust you and what you say, you know, but when you got certifications or a degree, there's like a certain amount of like foundation already there that you're standing on.
Yeah. And keywords too. Cause you know, with these recruiters, they have, and I didn't understand that at the time, but I understand it now. Recruiters, they have criteria that they have to go by, and sure, they have to get people in at a certain amount of time. So it's like, okay, this customer wants, and customer meaning a company, they want somebody who has a CCNA, or they want somebody who has this much experience. So they do key search. It's like, okay, CCNA, click. Okay, my name pops up because it shows I have a CCNA.
Yep.
And those key searches are also a big part of it.
Sure.
So a certification does not get you a job. It just gets you to the interview.
100%.
It helps you get to the interview. 100%. It does not get you a job.
Yep. Same with degrees.
Same with degrees.
Absolutely same with degrees.
So, I mean, I know this is a very long testimony, very long story, but, yeah, so I get that. I do the, hybrid thing. And this is where I start getting my experience with firewalls and networking. Cause like that hybrid, even though it was a hybrid systems networking job, they saw me as a networking admin. And I think going back to the CCNA thing, told them, okay, this guy knows networking. We're going to have to do all our networking projects. So I got a ton of network experience. I did a lot of switch designs. I did a lot of spine leaf, architecture designs for customers, a lot of like ISP circuit upgrades, a lot of firewall upgrades. I even did a BGP design for one of our larger customers. And then fast forward to today, that experience got me during that job, I got my CCMP, and then that job got me that experience with my CCMP got my job that I have today, where I'm doing like the stuff. And that's how I got into the field. So that was a very long story. So.
No, man, that was a great story. I love a lot of the things that you talked about in there. You know, one of the things that we're big proponents here at the Art of Network Engineering is mental health. And you certainly went through a lot of like ups and downs. And so what are some of the things that you do to like help your mental health, right? Like you must have some hobbies and stuff like that, things you do to unwind and just help, like, you know, keep you cool. Yeah, I've been eyeballing that all night, man.
You see that?
That's quite the setup you got back there.
Yeah, no, music is definitely my outlet for mental health. I do a lot of music, a lot of mixing and mastering of other people's songs and all that, anything in the electronic space. So anything from rap to R&B to EDM, electronic dance music to, and I'm recently starting to learn how to mix and master even alternative music, like alternative and rock and all that too. So that's been a new experience for me. But I love doing music. That's why I got my little studio back there. And then, you know, I'm kind of a spiritual man of faith as well. So I do a lot of prayer, a lot of walking, praying, meditation, that definitely helps with my mental health. And especially during the times when things got stressful or when things got, things got uncertain, or even when I had problems with people that I worked with and all that, a lot of time praying to God, and a lot of time just being by myself, listening to like lo-fi hip hop or a mix of the song or something like that. That's how I was able to keep my mental health intact. And then always keeping my why, always making sure that I always kept my why at the forefront of everything I do. Like, why am I doing this?
Yeah,
I'm doing this because I know how it feels like to be scraping by check to check. And I don't ever want to return that. I don't ever want to return to that again. So because of that, I need to always stay abreast with this technology.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, that's very powerful stuff right there. I mean, and I think a lot of people forget to think about, like, why am I doing this? You know, like, I'm studying for the cert because somebody told me to, or because, you know, I hear that's how I'm going to get a job. No, your why is just like you said. Like, I've lived at a point where I was scraping by paycheck to paycheck. My wife called me and said, we can't give our son a bath tonight. Like, that's why.
Yeah.
You know, that's a powerful, probably the most powerful motivator I've ever heard.
And that was my why. And now I'm at the point where I'm content with my job now. I'm studying for my CCIE now. So maybe I'll come back on here again after I get my CCIE. I'll tell you how that went.
We'll check in with you after you get your numbers. I love it.
Yeah. So, but nah, that's the why is definitely the big motivator. Not only for the grind that I go through every day, but also to keep my, like you said, my mental health intact. It's like, hey, if my mental health is not intact, then I can't address my why. And that's usually my motivator to keep everything intact.
Oh, man. Adam, this has been a fun conversation. Is there anything that we should have asked you? We've talked about an awful lot tonight. So is there anything that we didn't cover that we should have talked about?
Really can't think of anything right now.
Yeah? No.
There's things I left out, but I think the gist of it, y'all got my story of how I got in the game, and I think we're good hands.
Awesome. Well, this has been a fun conversation, largely in part to our Patreon family joining us and hanging out with us. If you're interested in joining our Patreon program, you can go to patreon.com/artofneteng. Check out the different tiers there and sign up. And we do appreciate your support of everything we do here on the podcast. And from the Traffic Network, he's asking Adam, where can we find your mixes? Are they available? Can we check out some of your work? You got a portfolio online?
I do have mixes, but give me some time to work all that out. I mean, as business owners, you guys understand a good infrastructure is key to making sure that things last. So I'm still working out some stuff, and then I will definitely promote that when the time's right.
Awesome. And we'll be happy to help you do that from our Twitter account. We'll sing your praises and share your work.
Yay.
Adam, where can people find more of your work? Are you on the socials? Got a blog?
Yeah. So right now, LinkedIn is probably the best way you can get a hold of me.
That's where I found you.
Yep. LinkedIn is the best way. It'll be linkedin.com/en/AdamEHill87. That's probably the best way to get in contact with me at the moment. And then once I get my infrastructures up with the socials and with the music and everything else I got going on, then that's when I'll have a little bit more of a social media presence for people to get in contact with me. But LinkedIn for sure will probably be the key thing, especially for IT stuff.
Awesome. Well, we'll go ahead and put the LinkedIn links. And if by the time this show publishes, Adam has more to share with us, we'll include all of that stuff in the show notes. So you can go right back to your podcatcher, tap on the LinkedIn link, and connect with Adam and follow him and see what he's been up to. Adam, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been such a great time. We appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you, and I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we will catch you next time on another episode of the Art of Network Engineering Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Hey there, friends. We hope you enjoyed listening to that episode just as much as we did recording it. If you want to hear more, make sure you subscribe to the show in your favorite podcatcher. You can also give that little bell rascal a little ringy-dingy so you know when we release new episodes. If you're social like we are, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Art of Net Eng. That's Art of NETENG. You can also find us on that weaving web that is the internet at artofnetworkengineering.com. There you'll find our show notes and some blog articles from the hosts, guests, and other friends who just like getting their thoughts down on that virtual paper. Until next time, friends, thanks for listening.